Now, get ready to spend the next 2 hours with our three sports-loving ladies, Lauren Brooks, Taylor Dahl, and Mia O'Brien.
This is Helmets and Heels.
Switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
On 1010XL.
Welcome in, everybody, to a fantastic Tuesday evening here on the First Coast. Little chilly. Hope you're bundled up if you're taking those evening walks. Because last week, we had the most perfect weather at the Players' Championship.
We
deserved it.
Oh, my goodness.
Right down to the rain, by the way. I mean, the fact that it didn't rain until Monday, I was like, man, round of applause for Lee Smith and his first year as tournament director. If the man hasn't headed out to Vegas yet, he needs to because the luck was with him.
And well, the time change helped, too.
The time change was perfect.
Everything. It worked out so well.
Yeah, and it had shown that there was potentially going to be rain on Saturday, but mainly more like Sunday, Monday, early last week. And I was like, uh-oh, I don't know about this final round of the Players' Championship on Sunday, if it's going to be rainy, how that's going to go over. But my goodness, every single person I think who I know who went to the tournament said it was one of the best they've ever attended. Mm-hmm. We'll get to the players here coming up in a little bit, but let's kick off the show talking about your Jacksonville Jaguars. No Calvin Ridley, but I think by now, Mia, everyone has gotten over that for the most part. Although his comments about wanting to stay in Jacksonville, I think, still hurt some people now that he is a Tennessee Titan. But the Jaguars have made several new additions. They've added several key players. And so I think people now, especially after hearing from new defensive lineman Eric Armstead, they can breathe a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that line from Calvin Ridley, which, RJ, if we have that in the system, like, let's make sure we call it up for those who may have forgotten. Thank you to Calvin for being a transparent athlete in 2024 and being so open and honest. We appreciate that. Not that all athletes aren't, but some certainly, you know, maybe a little bit more tight-lipped with the media.
For sure.
He was not. He was very forthright with the Nashville media that he wanted to be in Jacksonville, but the Tennessee Titans gave him more money, and I don't fault him at all. People I've talked to within the organization here in Jacksonville don't fault him at all. But don't make two ways about it, folks, as RJ's going to cue up the sound here in a second. People in Jacksonville at 3:02 last Wednesday truly believed that Calvin Ridley would be a Jacksonville Jaguar, and evidently, so did he.
I know that I have a certain type of skills, and so I'm not, you know, scared to go with the good or with, you know, who's trying to be good. So I think, you know, playing them twice a year, I was watching them and looking at, you know, the things they did have. I know that D-Hop's here, and I know that, you know, I want to play with another receiver on the other side that, you know, help me, you know, do what I do best too. So I knew that they had that, and I knew they had a really good defense, and, you know, they were upcoming and stuff. So I, you know, I was looking into it. You know, I really wanted to honestly be with the Jags, but, you know, there was a lot of things that I wasn't working out for me. And then I think the Titans had that other side for me. So I chose the Titans. And obviously the money was pretty good.
The money was pretty good. Yeah, $50 million up front, I would say so, which, again, can't fault the man. Yeah. Life-changing money. It is what it is. Business is business, in the words of Yannick Ngakoue.
And that's what's interesting with this one, because I think that, like you said, this time when we were on air last Tuesday, we were like, hey, there's word that they might get Calvin. Like, what will people switch their mindset of Trent Baalke if he's able to be able to keep Calvin and get Gabe Davis and some of these other moves that had happened by then? You know, how much things will shift? But what's funny is the reactions that I saw on Twitter were like, dang, that kind of sucks, but no thank you, not that much money do I want to play Calvin Ridley. So it was kind of a situation where, like, we don't want to see him play on the Titans, obviously, because you do not want him to go have a 1,300-yard season in Tennessee. But at the same time, I think that people were also very aware, like, there was some issues last season and you're not quite worth that money to us when it comes to that. But that does obviously open for a lot of people to now you need another wide receiver is where the mindset went.
Yeah, look, Calvin Ridley has talent. Nobody's going to deny that. But he did choose a place, in my opinion, where he's not going to be set up to be as successful as he had chosen Jacksonville. Even though, yes, he's talking about having the receiver on the other side. But the fact that I don't think Will Levis is half as good as Trevor Lawrence. And so that's where I think I understand take the money and run by all means. But I don't think he's going to look back and have better years in Tennessee than he would have had here. But you know what? That's the beautiful part about sports is he can sit here and see people's reactions online and social media and he can just go prove them wrong, which is what we were hoping he would do here, when most people in the national media thought with all that rust he was coming off of, there's no chance that he would have the type of season that he predicted for himself to have. Mia, we got to be on the Zoom call with Eric Armstead coming here from San Francisco. I thought he was incredibly well-spoken and super genuine of a guy. Oh, by the way, really good football player too, and I think he's going to help the middle of that defensive line, but I think he's going to bring so much to our city in general as well.
Yeah, let's talk about the masterclass line, Lauren.
Let's do it.
I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Yes, of course, folks, in case you missed it, I asked him about the masterclass, which has become a moniker of sorts on Jaguars Twitter. So many people refer to Trent Baalke's strategic moves as a masterclass. Little did he know when Eric Armstead tweeted out on Saturday, "I need the masterclass in Jacksonville." Folks were like, "Oh my God, they're all in cahoots. They know what they're doing." He told us he had no idea that that was a thing on Jags Twitter. His masterclass, though, his own personal masterclass, was he was hoping to learn more about areas that he and his foundation could make an impact in the city of Jacksonville by hearing about different neighborhoods and different places in terms of restaurants and things to do, certainly, but also local elementary schools, nonprofits they could have an impact on. So, look, if that doesn't say the stars are aligning, I'm not sure what will.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I believe him, Mia and Taylor, because of the fact that he then, when someone responded, "We hate the Titans," he's like, "Oh, okay, I didn't know that. I didn't know that the Jaguars hated the Titans." And so I definitely don't think that he knew masterclass was something about the general manager. People would tweet about the general manager who picked him in the first round once upon a time.
Yeah, and that's the one when you go to that connection, because there have obviously and will continue to be questions about Trent Baalke, but that is one that you can directly correlate with Trent, because Trent was a part of the staff that drafted him, and he mentioned it in his presser about, you know, like, "I'm familiar with Trent. I liked Trent. That's part of the conversations that led to me coming to Jacksonville." So that's something that you definitely have to give kudos to Baalke on in that sense. And it is. I think that last season when we talked about, there were issues all over, and at different times of year, different things stood out more. But the interior defensive line was an issue for probably all, if not the majority of the year. And so when you go in, and we talked about the interior offensive line and the interior defensive line, and those are things that were majorly addressed this offseason. And so that's something that I think is really important. But Eric, I just think he's one of those guys, yes, a little bit older, but I still would expect a good 3, 4, 5 years out of him. And but previous to the last couple seasons, he's also been extremely healthy. So you just got to hope that the ankle that happened and how it lingered a little bit is healed and good, and he can play to what the standard, you know, which is obviously being able to help get to the quarterback, which was a major issue from the inside last season. And I saw someone tweet, how many sacks are you expecting to have now between Trayvon, Josh, and Eric? And I honestly, like, in my mind calculating, because we kind of mocked Tony Boselli last season when it came to when he had his guess, but now this, like, you have someone that can also get to the quarterback from the inside. It's just so massively important, and it's something that obviously the Jags not only kind of lacked last season, but with injuries it got hurt even more. And so now if you can get some of these other guys healthy, when you talk about Devon and some of these other guys, and you have a guy like this who's able to really, that's his job and that's what he excels at, it gives us an opportunity for the line to just take such a massive leap.
Yeah, I don't think the Jaguars have had an interior presence that could add significant sacks since Marcel Darius.
Mm-hmm. Or really. Calais, depending on, what you think of Calais as.
Yeah, I always called Calais the big end. And so that's why I changed that slightly. But the breaking it down, it's like, yes, like Taylor said, all three of these guys, and then certainly Travis Gibson, I'm about to ask you about him. Mm-hmm. Taylor, like, all of these guys, any other guys in the rotation, whether it's Yasir Abdullah, Lacey, all those types of guys, like, that is their job, obviously, to affect the quarterback and certainly help from the inside, and a healthy Devon Hamilton, hopefully, will all contribute to that. All right, Taylor, you are the expert. Tell us about the new Jaguars outside linebacker, Travis Gibson.
Yeah, I am a huge fan of Travis, and I was talking to Frank about this a little bit. I was super upset when the Bears, number one, and I was talking about this a little bit ago, but he came to Chicago. Chicago drafted him in the fifth round. He was kind of a rotational piece. Injuries started happening, so he became a major piece on that line towards the end of the, I guess, 21 season, I guess it would have been. 7 sacks. 4 of them came within the last 5-6 weeks of the season. So that was when he became the starter and was taking over some big name guys. And immediately you were like, okay, there's something that you see in this guy. And so that whole offseason, I was like, Travis, he's going to take a massive leap. He's going to take a massive leap. They had just gotten Eberflus. Eberflus started taking a lot of his guys, bringing them from Indy, because obviously he was in Indy. Indy had that great defense that season before. So he was kind of stealing some of the guys from Indy to bring to Chicago. And at that point, those were his guys, kind of took over Travis's spot. And a lot of us in Chicago were upset because Travis had a phenomenal end to the season. The Bears at the time, they went from a 3-4 to a 4-3. And so at that time, they were running a 4-3. So that's part of the question, too, which I know Nielsen's kind of like, it's nothing. Like, I do everything.
Multiple fronts.
Yeah, like, they do everything.
Everybody does everything.
He excels in a 4-3. So it'll be really interesting to see what exactly they do. You're not going to really see him. He can, but it's not something he excels in when it comes to back having to, like, drop back in coverage or anything like that. He's a guy that if you tell him to pass the rusher, he's going to be able to do that and at a pretty high level. That he, when he can just focus on that, whole other level player, and that's what he was able to do when they went to the 4-3. So it will be interesting to see what they do with him, but he's fast, he's strong. I was talking to Frank about how much Chicago just loved him because he's fun, he's like kind of goofy in certain aspects, but when he gets on the football field, just kind of a little more intense at moments where you're like, whoa, that Travis, calm down a little bit. But he's great, and I love him. So I don't think there's much of a negative in this because it's like a low-risk, possible high-reward type thing to me. And so I'm interested. I'm interested to see how much they put. Obviously, here he'll be more of that rotational piece, but I think that will benefit him a lot because they'll be able to put him out there in the specific situations when he's just going after the quarterback.
Yeah, and I think most people, Mia, paying attention to the defense, are excited to see what it looks like with Ryan Nielsen at the helm, right? And we'll get, I would say, a little bit of samples of that in OTAs, but certainly it'll take a while until we can really diagnose exactly what he wants to do.
I just want to go back to the pass rusher, outside linebacker conversation. When we have suggested the thought of edge rusher at 17, edge rusher at 48, mm-hmm. I have seen so much pushback from Jaguars fans, from people who work at this station. And I can't help but look at them and say, your outside linebacker room a year ago was 41, 44. Both will be back this year. Both very productive. Ke'Lavon Chaisson and DeJuan Smoot. Both of those guys are gone.
Yeah.
At least as of this writing, DeJuan Smoot is not on the roster. He remains a free agent. The next guys in line are what? Yasir Abdullah, mm-hmm. for certain, although he may be more of a chess piece in Ryan Nielsen's defense.
Which I'd like to see more of him, by the
way. I would, too. I think, especially if nothing else, if he fills the void of Ke'Lavon Chaisson,
yeah.
plays special teams as your third down specialist, I think you'll get a different look with him, which is what the previous staff was hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
And DJ Coleman? Like, that's next man up right now.
Yeah.
That's why
and
you
Travis
had to
Gibson.
Sign.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah,
that's why you had to go sign Travis Gibson.
Yeah.
You probably have to still look into it, or at least kick the tires on a Bud Dupree, who played for Nielsen up in Atlanta last year, because I don't see a world in which you roll into the draft with the five guys I just outlined and say, yeah, we don't need to take an edge rusher early. Like, it would be screaming, guess what? We are going to take an edge rusher, especially with how lean this year's draft class is.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that anyone balks at it because a year ago when the Jaguars
yep.
didn't do anything with the outside linebacker position in free agency, we were all really upset.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
and look, DeJuan Smoot is a great depth piece to have. But he can't be the third guy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's with, depending on, you know, how you feel about Gibson once he gets into this rotation. But I think I saw Jared Verse going super high mm-hmm. In a mock draft
today. People are mocking him to the Bears at 9
that's exactly what
I was curious your take on that, Taylor.
I just did a podcast on that. Well, maybe we'll talk a little bit more about it. But because, obviously, Dallas Turner, I feel like, is the one that is ranked higher on a lot of people's draft boards. So when I've been seeing Verse lately, I've been interested. But I actually could probably pull a little clip from that and explain why maybe some people are drafting Verse over Dallas Turner.
Interesting. Okay, sounds
higher,
good.
I mean.
Yeah, and look, if you're a Florida State fan, then you certainly already know this. Verse went for a long time without a sack this past season, and people expected him to have, you know, crazy numbers. And so it took longer than they expected, but still, he's a super talented edge rusher. But yeah, I'm surprised if people balk at it, especially at 48. People are just so in love with a corner at 17
yeah.
at
yes.
this point.
And or a wide receiver.
Why. And, yeah, to a lesser extent, I feel like wide receiver, but, yeah.
And I will say, too, I think because the Jags' sack number increased so much last season, even though it was just pretty much all Trayvon and Josh, I the year before it was so bad that people were just like edge because we need pass rush. And so now you add Eric in the middle and you're like, okay, well, you already had two guys that were able to get. So is that really a high need? But you still don't technically, like Mia said, that depth of the edge is still definitely, there's a little bit of question marks floating around that area.
Yeah, certainly. All right. We will get into the players and certainly talk way more football. You are listening to Helmets and Heels driven by Tire Outlet on 1010 XL and any 2.5.
Mankey's in a playoff. Miss and Scheffler makes history. Unbelievable. How did that not drop? But Scotty Scheffler is the 50th Players Champion. And the first to go back-to-back.
Helmets and Heels, illuminated by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers
on 1010XL.
Taylor Dahl, Mia O'Brien, RJ Saunders, I'm Lauren Brooks with you on this Tuesday evening. It was a glorious edition of the Players. It happened to be the 50th anniversary, and it happened to be that history was made as Scotty Scheffler went back to back. I will tell y'all, I was walking toward the media center a few minutes before our show on Friday, and I walked about a foot away from Scotty Scheffler as he was walking in to go get work done in the players' recovery zone. And he had a smile on his face, and he seemed jovial, and I thought, that sure doesn't seem like a guy who has been having neck pain all day. Yeah. Because
when I have a kink in my neck, I'm like, I hate everything.
As I've said on air before, not recently, but a few years ago, I had such severe neck pain that I couldn't drive myself to the doctor. And then I ended up having to have some work done on my neck. And it is absolutely 100% miserable. Awful. So for him to go from that and getting work done on Friday to then posting a final score of 20 under was just unbelievable. And Mia, I know you asked the question, can Scotty Scheffler move the needle? I think the PGA Tour is in such a good spot with the crop of guys that they have. And I think now people are kind of getting used to the fact that he's not going to be the showstopper, but he's going to play incredibly dang good golf every single time he wants to.
Yeah, the tour really liked that monologue I went on yesterday, didn't they? No, we love the folks of the tour. We love the Players Championship. And listen, I brought it up last week, and I know it hurt Mark Carnevale, who absolutely loves Scotty Scheffler as a person, just like so many of us. But I just was very curious if Scotty Scheffler playing well, and granted, when he won the Players a year ago, it was in a runaway, I was just very curious what that would mean for ratings. And yes, I've seen the one listener out there who keeps sending us the NASCAR versus Players ratings. Okay, cool. For me,
what's better? What's his point?
NASCAR, I guess, technically rated higher.
But,
okay. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know anyone who watched. I don't know either. Versus the Players.
Know people that saw what was happening and raced to their televisions because they were like, "Oh my goodness! Like, he's actually going to do it." And it's funny. I'm working on a video right now regarding the NCAA tournament, and so many people have said to me, "It's UConn versus the field." I said it last week, and I tweeted it too. It was always Scheffler versus the field. Anyone you spoke to, whether they were a golf analyst, someone who works with the tour, a casual fan who was just walking around for the first time, everyone knew it was Scheffler versus the field, and he delivered. It's that simple. And in the same vein, it wasn't boring. Maybe it's because he had to come from behind. Maybe it's because he had the creak in his neck on Friday. But I was captivated with the race. And obviously part of it was you had such drama, especially on those final three holes Sunday.
Yeah, it was looking like for a minute it could possibly be like a four
person playoff.
Oh my goodness. Could you imagine if that's what it ended up?
All the people who work at the tour would have been like, please, dear God, no. I just want to go home. I've been here since 5 o'clock in the morning. As the fans, yes, that would have been awesome.
It was just, there were several moments. Like his putting is just to watch some of the putts he would make. And I was talking to Jack O'Brien about this earlier, and I was like, man, he makes it look so easy. And other guys, Brian Harman, putting it ruined his weekend pretty much is what it came down to for him. And then you watch Scheffler and you're just like, no problem. Just makes every putt look easy, every shot in general.
And that was the big struggle, by the way, coming in, was the putter.
Yes, and not on Sunday. I was like, man.
Yeah, he only had to putt 25 times on Sunday because his ball striking is so good. That is astounding to me over 18 holes. I think what was super cool about this tournament specifically for us locally was obviously how great the weather was and the fact that it was sold out left and right, mm-hmm. right? Like, you had the parking sold out early, and then you had tickets on Saturday, which had never been fully, it had never been fully sold out. That was sold out. Mm-hmm. And everyone on the golf course realized, like, this is one of the best tournaments ever because of some of the names we have and some of the just gorgeous days that we're getting. And those of us who have been for many, many, many years, we know it can be crazy weather.
Yeah.
The first tournament that I went to as an adult where, like, I paid attention to golf was the year Adam Scott won in 2004. I had just graduated, or I was about to graduate from Florida, and I came back for a few days. It was probably spring break. And I went to the tournament over those days and watched Adam Scott a ton. And I was like, okay, I finally understand. I had been to the Players in high school and stuff mm-hmm. like that, but I didn't ever focus that much on golf. And that was the year that I finally understood why this event is so cool, because of this course.
Yeah.
And everyone talks about 17, but as soon as they get through the scary part of 17, they have to go to 18, which is so incredibly difficult. By the way, last year I saw a giant alligator. I told you all about that last mm-hmm. Tuesday night. This year, right behind the 16 chalet on your way to Taste of Jack, there was like a 3-foot alligator that was just hanging out all week long. And so I'm sure that
we also do need to pay tribute to our friend we made this time last week.
The raccoon?
Yes.
Raccoon.
Yes. Did we name him? What? Because all I know is I had multiple people coming up to me all weekend saying, oh my God, I saw Taylor's clip. I still can't believe a raccoon invaded Helmets and Heels.
We might have to call him Gator Bait because I just mentioned the alligator. No, I'm
sure
that raccoon
was pretty
bigger. He might have. But it was one of those weeks that I'm so proud of our city and this golf tournament that we put on. And like we said, Lee Smith and the entire team, Miranda, who joined us every week, Rossum, like they all crushed it from Cole Swindell to the final round on Sunday, and just how spectacular the course looked on TV. And of course, if you went, the course was in such good shape too. Like, it was just wonderful. And the other thing to me is Scottie Scheffler, he showed us something that he hadn't showed us yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, he is a tough-ass competitor.
Yeah.
He just won a week ago.
Yep.
He just won millions of dollars the week before. His neck hurting, he could have been like, you know what? I'm good. Yes, it's the Players. It's the best field in golf. But I just won. I'm going to deal with the biggest
purse.
He might
have been looking at that.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm going to go recuperate. It's a long season.
Yeah.
Like, he could have done that. And instead, he gutted it out. And that's something that if I'm another player on that PGA Tour, I'm thinking, this guy is here for a long, he's going to be a winner for a long time.
Yeah. I will be honest, I was rooting very hard for Schauffele, though, because I was like, oh, I picked Schauffele entering the show. And I was like, so obviously when you pick a certain player,
correct,
it adds
that
a
always
whole
skews,
other
yeah.
element of it. But like, there we have our group text of like our media group here, and everyone's like, oh, like Scheffler's on fire. I was like, no, I need Schauffele. Now I'm committed to this. I'm committed to this pick.
Imagine if you had had to buy lunch for everyone because your pick lost. Yeah. And it's the reverse of winning. Mm-hmm. But yeah. And that's why people love fantasy sports, because it always does add that extra element. I will say, like, I was cheering probably more for like a Xander or Wyndham Clark, just because I wanted to see it go to a playoff, because I was at home enjoying. Okay, what was the best food you had all week on the course, Mia?
You mean not from the media center?
Correct.
I was going to say the media center was fantastic. Probably the brisket that I had. Shout out to Visit Barbados. The brisket on 16 was outstanding. And I would also like to give a shout out to our friends from Sawgrass Marriott at the Gator Club. If you know what I'm talking about, it's opposite 13 on the patio of the Sawgrass Marriott, the American Gator Club. That's their restaurant. They also have this amazing multi-patio setup that they redid. Had the chance to go to their reception on Saturday. So technically, this is a cop-out because it wasn't on the course. But it is part of Sawgrass and Sawgrass Marriott. And so I encourage you guys to go check out the views there. Who knows? Maybe Helmets and Heels will pop up for a live show there in the very near future. Because the food was outstanding. I posted the video today. They actually had a Sawgrass Splash Luge, which was like epic.
Next level.
And then like a dessert wall and a raw bar, and it was awesome. So Saturday was my day to have the food for sure.
Gotcha. We had our 1010 XL lunch out at Taste of Jack's on Thursday, and then I also went to the same place on Friday, Cousins Maine Lobster, which is not technically local. I know, I mean, they have a place here, but obviously the lobster is coming from elsewhere. But it The lobster quesadilla is so incredibly delicious.
Oh, I haven't had that.
It's so
good. I've had
good.
Just the roll and I've had the grilled cheese and they're both so delicious.
I love, they pack a good amount of lobster in there, so really good. And Taylor, you didn't get out much this year.
I wasn't out as much. Number one, I had to be in the building during the week. And then Saturday, I was going to go out for updates. Normally, I had to do updates in the morning until 2, but we ended up, like, they broke down equipment the night before because of some other things that were going on. So Richie was like, do you mind just doing updates here? I'm like, honestly, it's fine. I was a little jealous actually because I was texting me and I was like, dang it, I'm not done until 2. By the time I like get home and change and then get out there, it's going to be 4 o'clock. And is it worth it? And I was going back and forth all day because so I definitely wasn't out there as much as I normally am. And I'm kind of bummed because I missed out on a lot of food and drinks that I would normally intake.
Yeah, well, there's always next year. I will say I hopped into the, not really hopped, walked. Into the Intercoastal Club there on 1213. Mm-hmm. That was my first time in there. Went in there on
Friday. Brand new this year.
Yeah, how was it?
It was fantastic. Yeah.
They said it's more of like sports bar-y looking.
Yeah, there
on
are
the
a
inside.
Ton of TVs in there. It is open air, so you can easily watch the golf and listen to everything on 12. And then you just walk across the deck and you see everything on 13.
Oh, nice.
So 12 green and 13 green, you can overlook both of those. So that was really great. And obviously everyone who's involved in the marquees or the chalets – at 16, 17, 18, like, they are just loving life every day because they can overlook that island green. They can also see, like I said, 16, and usually there's free beverages, and they love it. They absolutely love it.
Did you splurge on the merch this year?
I did. I may or may not be wearing some of it currently. Listen.
It's so good. So much good stuff.
It's just, first off, let's start with the disclaimer of – at the media outing for the Players' Championship, I somehow, some way, won closest to the water on 18. Needless to say, that was unintentional to end up that close to the water. And so I got a $50 gift card to the fan shop, coupled with, being a media member, get a nice little discount. I was like, you know what? I can justify this. And then after I bought some, you know, gifts for our house, then my mom texted me and was like, can you please go get X, Y, and Z, you know, for your dad and your brother? And I was like, sure, twist my fancy. I'll go on back and get some more stuff. I do want to shout out the boys from Barstool, especially Trent, who, of course, is a native of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. We were talking some Iowa basketball, and the boys were like, you've proven your worth. You're Iowa trivia. Here's a special gift for you. And so, ironically, I had just bought my my guy best friend from growing up. I had just bought him a surprise gift from the Barstool players line.
Oh, love it.
And then they handed me more. So I was like, Thomas, you're in luck. So,
love it. There was definitely some celebrities out there this week.
There always are. And that's what the Players brings to you. It brings people who don't necessarily love golf, who just want the social aspect. Mm-hmm. And then it certainly will bring celebrities who love golf as well. All right, we've got Taylor to take us around the NFL when we return. More on Jared Verse and a whole lot more. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Sports. With a glass of Chardonnay, Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
On 1010XL.
I'm liking these new liners. Shout out to First Coast Lighting and Fans. Man, oh man.
We're illuminating.
And keeping us classy. Because nothing says classy like good lighting. All right, Taylor. You have to tell us the moment that you found out that Justin Fields is getting traded to the Steelers. And not just when you found that out, but when you also immediately realized it was for a 6th round pick.
Yeah.
Like, you don't cuss, so I can ask you specifically, what did you say when you first saw that? Otherwise, I would have to say you probably can't share it because there would probably have been expletives.
Yeah,
I can tell you she was in mourning on Saturday.
I am still sad. I've started the moving on process, but honestly, I'll preface it by saying I knew this was coming. So I had been preparing myself for like a month and a half of like, Justin Fields is going to be gone. I had a strong feeling, honestly, it was going to be Pittsburgh, especially once the Kirk connected to Atlanta was happening. But then when they got Russ, I was like, well, now what? Because I truly don't know. And then so then Denver started flying a little bit. Oakland was flying a little bit. And it was all these things. I'm like, none of those really make sense to me. But Pittsburgh did in certain areas just because I think that obviously with this Russ thing, Russ isn't a long-term answer for them. And this gives them a possibility of a guy to, you know, this year they're saying it's not even a competition. He's the backup is what they're saying. So it gives Justin a year to really try and get developed, which he never had the chance to in Chicago.
And by the way, I don't believe that Russ is cemented as the starter all year long.
I don't either. I honestly, I don't know if right now they'd come out and full on be like, it's a quarterback competition.
Which
but
I think they should have.
They should
like,
have.
I don't I know agree. Why. It's not like you owe anything to Russ. You're paying him virtually nothing.
$2 million.
Yeah, and he hasn't been that
Denver
good.
Denver has all of the contract.
Right, you had him for a year, or you signed him for a year. He hasn't been that good. Like, I don't understand why we want a competition at every other position.
Yeah.
Except quarterback, because I guess their egos can't handle it.
Yeah, like, I want to know how Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph feel about this after the competition they had to have down the stretch last year.
Right. Like, I was really surprised that Brooke Pryor of ESPN, when she tweeted out that Russ Wilson is cemented as the starter, I was like, that? Why? Like, just why would you do that to
yourself?
Do that to yourself?
What were you born into that this is suddenly your birthright, Russ?
Yeah.
Like,
you done for the city of Pittsburgh?
I mean, if he had just come from winning football
in
Seattle and
some good season.
Yeah, and winning the Super Bowl and then going, I totally understand that. Yeah. But doesn't competition make us better? Like, that's what I've always been, I guess, confused about. Because it seems like it's sometimes quarterbacks we have to protect their egos.
Which, side note really quick, did you know how deeply, like, Pittsburgh hated Kenny Pickett? Like, their fans?
Which is surprising because he went to Pitt.
Yeah. And they loved it. I mean, I think it was because, like, they saw firsthand his physical limitations at Pitt. And then the fact that
they had to watch him.
They were like,
teams.
We need to start the clock. We need a young quarterback. And he's the best one. And also, we've watched him. So, therefore, we will draft him.
So aggressively. And I get not wanting him to be, like, your guy. But the amount of Steelers fans that I saw when he got traded that were like, thank God he's out of Pittsburgh. But I guess there was some things where he
refused to dress as the emergency quarterback in week 17.
And
Jacksonville would turn, because Pittsburgh and Jacksonville, I feel like fan bases are kind of similar, like blue collar cities for the most part. Like,
they've had a pretty storied rivalry.
Yeah, and we're super passionate. Both cities are super passionate about their football team, very protective. But if you like
their
Jalen
standards
Ramsey
of quarterbacks
here,
a little higher,
for
not
sure.
By much. But, like, you know what I mean.
If once a player turns its back on Jacksonville or Pittsburgh, or what have you, like, that fan base is going to turn on that player, and so that's why, like I just said, Jalen Ramsey here is the poster child for that.
And it really makes you think about, because when I saw that, my immediate thought was, it just shows you how much when you are like in depth in your organization, how much more you know, like how much more about just the players' personalities and who they get along with and who they don't get along with and what coaches may not like this player and all of that stuff, because it's just not something we really saw super nationally, but it was clearly a storyline there, because the moment it happened, they were like, thank God he's been bad for this locker room since he's gotten here, pretty much.
Now, I have always thought, like I said, competition is good. So in my opinion, Justin Fields competing with Caleb Williams, who's now going to be drafted number one overall, I don't think that's a bad thing, but obviously Chicago thought there would be a fragmented section of the locker room, and so they didn't want to do that. Okay, this is a question I've heard no one pose whatsoever, but would you have hated Justin Fields? Again, this is would have been before Mac Jones is here, but would you have hated Justin Fields as the backup here?
No.
I wouldn't have hated
him at all.
I
still, for better or worse, maybe it's because I share an office with Taylor, I still believe there's a future for Justin Fields down the road
here,
as a starter.
That's a path that it wouldn't have been here.
Right. And I'm not saying that Mac Jones is never going to be a starter again, but I believe Mac Jones, for him, the future is as a bridge quarterback, as a guy akin to, I don't want to say this in front of Taylor, but akin to a Mitch Trubisky, where he's the bridge, he's a backup, he can figure it out from there. Like, I mean, akin to a Joe Flacco. Maybe that's a better analogy Mac Jones. Obviously, you know, 15 years younger. But I would equate it to that, where like Joe Flacco has twilighted and said, you know what, I'm okay with being that bridge. I'm okay with being the backup. I see that for Mac. I still don't see that for Justin Fields, because to Taylor's point, I'm not really sure he's ever had the opportunity to develop. And so I still want him to have that chance. That's why this is probably a pretty good landing spot.
And that's why Ryan Poles did it. So we go back to my immediate reaction. Obviously upset. I knew it was coming. I see a sixth round and I was like, that really sucks. But I was slowly getting it. It was just, okay, I was hearing third and fourth weren't happening. So I'm like, okay, well, it's going to end up being, I didn't know, a next year sixth, but come to find out, it just was a situation where Ryan Poles, and he, the one thing I will say, and I've gloated about him a ton because I love Ryan Poles, he's a very honest person. He's been like upfront with Bears fans, every media, every presser that he's available. He's very like, this is my mindset, this is what I want to do, this is my feelings towards this. Very blunt, very obvious. And so he said, a month ago, I want to do right by Justin. People started being like, but are you really? Because now we're just playing this waiting game. Are you going to wait until the draft? We already know, like, Caleb Williams is pretty much happening. Is this really good for Justin? All these other quarterbacks are landing places, and Justin's, it was just like dropping and dropping. But come to find out, he was thinking about Justin Fields and gave Justin Fields an option. I from what I heard, there was like four or five teams that were calling on Justin, some of which were offering more, including Philly. But he would have definitely been a backup in Philly behind Jalen. And Ryan Poles wanted him to go somewhere where he has the opportunity to start. So he gave Justin the, where do you want to go? And, okay, Justin said Pittsburgh. He wanted to go work with Mike Tomlin. He liked some of the guys. George Pickens, that had always been kind of a thing when George Pickens was getting drafted. They was very vocal about, like, Justin made a lot of comments of, like, I'd love to play with George Pickens. So
they were
that
recruited
was
together once upon a time.
Yeah,
never forget.
Say, they were at Georgia.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were there the exact same time, but I would assume they were.
Yeah, it had to be similar because he's made a lot of comments about wanting to play with him. So that was the thing. It ended up coming down to Ryan Poles said, I'll take less to make sure that you have an opportunity in your next spot and do right by you is what he did. It kind of sucks for us, the Bears in general, because they also only have four picks now this draft. And so he's, I'm sure, going to have to figure some other stuff out. But I think it's best for Justin. I think it's a good spot. I mean, it's an organization that obviously has been in a weird last few years because of the Mason Rudolph and Kenny Pickett and Trubisky and all of this type of stuff. But they also still are able to win football games. So I think it's a good spot for him. And I like the way that Ryan Poles did it. Obviously, I wish we could have got a third or fourth. It would have been nice. It's sad to see Justin go because he's one of the like hardest working players I've ever seen. On the Bears, so that's kind of the crappy part, but I'll root for him a little bit because it's Steelers. That's another thing. I was like, dang it, I can't cheer for Pittsburgh.
But. Yeah, and you may not have to depending on what happens, you know, with Russell. It's just like Gardner Minshew, yes, he went to the Eagles. He was a backup. We all knew he was going to be a backup, but the starting quarterbacks get hurt so often these days that you still may have a chance to prove yourself. Then Gardner goes to the Colts, and Anthony Richardson gets hurt pretty early in the season. And so that's where I wonder, and I'm only suggesting Jacksonville again before the Mac Jones trade had happened, because what a great backup quarterback to have, and then that could springboard him to going to another team. Like, obviously, no offense to Mac Jones, but Justin Fields has been better than what Mac Jones has been. But again, Mac Jones has been in a terrible situation, worse off than Justin Fields, honestly, as far as not having an offensive coordinator for a while and all the dysfunction
there. The year one
there.
Not, though. And that was, like, the best thing for Mac is because he came into a situation that was pretty solid with a coach that was good. He wasn't losing his head coach and offensive coordinator and trying to build a team from the absolute ground. They had a foundation his first year. It just kind of fell apart after that. But Justin, I mean, he came in, got thrown in week four, playing the one of the best defenses at the time, like the Browns defense, in his first NFL game after building a team around Andy Dalton, a completely different style quarterback. And from then has just kind of gotten the short end of the stick. And then now they just get to the point where you're looking at an offensive line and a defense that's built, and he gets booted off, and you now are looking at a new quarterback coming in, taking over this pretty good situation. So that's why I feel a little bad, because unfortunately for him, the Bears had to tear down and rebuild right when his development was most important.
I can understand that. All right, Taylor, tell us more about Jared Verse and why you think he'll go fairly high in the first round.
So I have this clip. I'll play it in a second. But when I was doing a podcast the other day, his name's Thor Nystrom. He works for Fantasy Pros.
Yep.
Big draft guy. I talk to him every year at some point around this time just to kind of get his ideas of, you know, his big board and what he wants. He's a Vikings fan, and he'd said in this podcast also, like, his hot take, I guess, but now that I'm seeing more, is that the Vikings will trade up to get J.J. McCarthy. Like, he says that's happening, or he would swear that would be what would happen. And I was like, they would want to trade up and, like, take him over a certain other quarterbacks, and they were like, he is very, very high on J.J. McCarthy. And then now today I get an alert like, oh, it's quite possible that the Vikings may trade up to four, whoever's picking four. I can't think of that right now. And I'm like, wow, Thor just said that last week. But let's play this clip. He kind of goes on to why he said that in general. Obviously, we were talking about Chicago, but he just said in general why he thinks that certain teams may draft Verse over Dallas Turner.
Those guys are super duper close.
Okay.
I just like that speed to power element of Jared Verse and that ability to set the edge of Jared Verse and different stuff like that. Dallas Turner, for me, he's more that pin the ears back and then run and chase type guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you get as much of the dual threat aspect that Jared Verse brings to you. So that's why at this moment I side with, like, if you have the odds board of who's going to be the first edge off the board, I would slightly side with Verse at this point because of that. And they both tested like freaks. I mean, Turner at 6'4", 242 was a 9.48 RAS. So, you know, right underneath what Verse was. But they're both very good prospects. But I think for what the Bears want to do there, getting the guy that both can rush the passer but also set a hard edge, I think that might be what they would end up would be the tiebreaker.
He sounds, by the way, like he's from
Midwest.
Minnesota.
Midwest accent. So that was his reasoning, which I get. And that's, I think that when you're looking at, that's why when you look at these big boards, it's really interesting because you also have to, not only that, I have so much respect for the draft guys because they not only are having to know like strengths and weaknesses of all of these players and what, you know, just what they're good at on the football field and what type of scheme they can fit in. But they also need to know team needs because certain teams, like maybe someone else may want Dallas Turner because they need specific things and not someone, like he said, to set up the edge more of just like a pass rush guy. And so you'd want Dallas Turner only. But when you have a team that needs like a dual guy on the edge or on your line, it changes things a little bit. So I have when I talk to some of these guys, I'm like, oh man, like I love listening. I could listen to them for hours just talk about some of these players.
Yeah, I love Dayton Brugler from The Athletic, mm-hmm. and he puts together the beast and everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's incredible that someone has the capacity, the brain capacity.
Yeah.
For all of that stuff, he does such a great job. All right, May, you ready to talk March Madness in the next segment?
Am I ready to talk March Madness, Lauren? I'm working on a video for our 1010XL channels right now regarding March Madness. Let's do it.
All right. Sorry,
just really quick before we hit this break, because it was just in the realm of what we were just talking about. I want to list this. Give you this list of the 10 players of what they said is the top 10 free agency. Maybe we can get to this a little later and see some of your opinions on this. But it popped out because we were just talking about this. But they have number one, Justin Fields, the Steelers, as the best signing. Number two, Falcons, QB, Kirk Cousins. Chiefs, L'Jarius Sneed tag. Chiefs, wide receiver, Marquise Brown. Ravens, Derrick Henry. Texans, Danielle Hunter. Bears, Keenan Allen. Niners, Leonard Floyd. Rams, Jonah Jackson. And then Commanders, Frankie Louvu. So I'm going to let you guys think on that a little bit, on that list.
Interesting. Yeah. All right, so we'll get to that. And a whole lot more. We do have basketball coming up. If you need help with your brackets, stay tuned right here to 1010XL on 2.5 FM.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels.
Brightened by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
On 1010XL.
All right, the men's basketball tournament begins. Actually, it's already underway. Number 16,
Wagner
versus number 16, Howard.
Let's go Seahawks. Shout out to Max Rottenecker, former Ithaca College kicker, now the lead SID.
Okay.
For Wagner.
Wagner is up 14-10 with about 11 minutes left in the first half.
I didn't steer you wrong, my bookie listeners, nooners, because I told you during XL primetime today, 3-point dog, take the Seahawks.
And what's funny is most people probably don't know whether it's Wagner or Howard that's the Seahawks.
Yes, yeah. Wagner is the Seahawks. Howard is the Bison.
I had to look at the little
Howard
logo.
Has the very fun story of Seth Towns. I'm sure you guys have heard. So Seth Towns started his career at Harvard.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Exactly. When COVID shut down the Ivy League's 2021 season, mm-hmm. he and everyone who was an Ivy League student athlete was able to transfer. He already was getting looks from major programs, so he grad transfers to Ohio State, has multiple season-ending injuries at Ohio State over the last 3 years. He is in his eighth year of eligibility,
wow,
finishing up his degree at Harvard. He's 26 years old. There's guys on this team that are 18 years old. It is absurd. It goes beyond transfer portal chaos because he's got like 9 degrees at this point. But he's also a good story to root for.
Yeah, I like it. We also have later tonight, tipping off at 9:10 p.m., number 10 Colorado State versus number 10 Virginia. Kind of crazy to see Virginia in a play-in game in the NCAA tournament, even though they are 10 seeds.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got college basketball. The NCAA March Madness begins in earnest, like I said, tonight, already underway. All right, so we've got Florida taking on Friday at 4:30, taking on the winner of tomorrow night's game between Boise State and Colorado. That one tips off at 9:10 p.m. Mia, tell me if I'm right when I say I want Boise State to win. That's who I think Florida matches up with better.
Well, you want Boise State to win because their head coach, Leon Rice, while the pep band for Boise was prepping for tonight's game, just sat down on the drum set and started playing the fight song, like straight up knew all the drumming and everything that was necessary. So that's why I want Boise State to win now, because I think that's one of the best videos I've seen this week, or at least since the tournament tipped off. But yeah, certainly. I mean, what's going to be interesting is the overarching conversation regarding the Mountain West. The Mountain West has six teams in the field. And of course, they are not considered a Power Five. They're not considered a Big Six conference. And yet the Big East only has three teams in the field. A lot of folks, though, believe that the Mountain West is only getting all this notoriety because they beat up on each other and everyone's like, look how good they are. But what have they actually done in the NCAA tournament besides, I don't know, San Diego State making the national title game a year ago? So six teams in the field. There's a national conversation of if they don't rack up some wins, the fact that two of their six teams are in the first four this week in Dayton, that maybe we'll have some bias towards them, akin to Gonzaga during the early years of Mark Few's run there, where it was dismissed as, well, you know, they've been playing in this no-name conference for the last 2 months. Like, do we really care about them? And so that'll be a storyline to follow. I also heard a crazy stat today. Because of the altitude across the Mountain West, like where those schools are, the BPI ranking is actually, like, adjusted because they take into consideration the altitude that these teams play at. Like, I need to research it more because I heard it was courtesy of Matt Norlander of CBS Sports. I just was like, what? No, like, how? How can you account for altitude as you're measuring a team's efficiency? So I don't – like, that one is from CBS Sports. I need to find out more exactly because that's weird to think that that's also why they're getting slighted.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Obviously, the big storyline surrounding Florida men's basketball is all centered around the lack of now center Micah Handlogton. It was a gruesome lower leg injury that he suffered in the loss to Auburn. The game was about a minute and a half in when all of a sudden he went down, and immediately I knew something was drastically wrong. I did not see the blood on his leg. I'm very thankful for that. I know other people did. Hayes mentioned that he saw it right away when he was watching live. But I knew something was wrong, just how quickly the Bridgestone Arena went quiet and how many of his teammates came out. And then, of course, you saw the stretcher and all that. And if you haven't read the story that Chris Harry wrote on FloridaGators.com about Micah Handlogton, the injury, his parents now driving him from Nashville to Indianapolis so that he can be with his teammates on Friday. The story is so, so good. Chris Harry does a fabulous job covering Florida men's basketball to begin with. But then this takes you even deeper inside the story of Handlogton. But I think the question, of course, becomes how does Alex Condon do? You knew immediately that once Handlogton went down, it was going to be a serious injury. And Alex Condon would be the guy to step up. He's such a good freshman. If you've watched any
of
Florida men's basketball,
he was more efficient the first two games of the SEC tournament for Florida.
You can't. I keep saying the reason Handlogton was in is because he provides chemistry with the rest of the starting guys in the starting five. There must be chemistry there because Todd Golden's kept him in and hasn't replaced him with Condon. And he's so well liked that's why I think he's continued to be the starter. But Condon, I think, does provide a little bit more offense. It's just you lose a big guy with five fouls to give, all those minutes and all the offensive rebounds. But yeah, to me, this is going to be a really good test. You hate it, but it's going to be a good test of Todd Golden and what he can do. And then, of course, the other question, what on earth is going on with Riley Kugel? Mm-hmm. Will he play on Friday? Will he not? And if you have seen any of Florida men's basketball this year, you also have seen Riley Kugel's dad and how massively built he is. And so you wonder, like, is his dad going to have a run-in with Golden if he doesn't play anymore? Because he's gone viral. But Alex Condon is the Australian freshman who played Australian rugby rules football. And so they're going to talk about that in the broadcast for sure, too. But it'll be a really interesting thing to see how Florida evolves without Handlogton.
Yeah, I think with Handlogton, number one, you go back to when they played Kentucky both times. John Calipari specifically noted him. The fact that they didn't foul Florida in the waning seconds of that game at Rupp Arena was because Cal was like, they're the best offensive rebounding team in the country. We didn't want to risk, you know, a tip out. And we know they would collect the rebound. They have a size advantage over us, which when you have a blue blood like Kentucky saying that, like, that's, it's interesting, but that was probably also an excuse from Cal. But I had a really good conversation a couple months ago when I was calling one of the JU games with Toby Frazier, former head coach at Paxson, of course, a former player at JU. And he was talking to me about how in this day and age in basketball, it's kind of a secret, but it's getting out more. Having post players that aren't necessarily your primary offensive threat and are there to solely set screens, play great defense, and collect rebounds. That's something that no one really talks about in college basketball, but in some regards you need, because without those guys creating opportunities for your guards, if everybody's just looking to score or if everybody's just looking to take it to the rack, there's no real flow. And additionally, you can start recruiting guys akin to what Todd Golden has Donna Murphy was in the building. I'm blaming her for that one for that today. What Todd Golden has done in recruiting some of those bigger guys, outside of maybe Tyrese Samuel, I guess he'd maybe kind of fall into a different category, is I don't want to say that they're replaceable, but it is a rotation. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
while Hanlogden is the starter, they bring Condon in, they bring Howe in. Like, those three guys play a similar style of basketball where they, unlike Purdue, are not, like with Zach Edey, where it's like the ball is being thrown into the middle and he is expected to work through the post and find his way to the hoop. That's not the way that modern basketball should be run. Those bigger guys should also be helping facilitate, even if they don't have the ball in their hands, by creating opportunities.
Yeah, that's the question, is what can Condon do offensively? Thomas Houck has been a guy that at times has shot the three super well. And then all of a sudden you had in the SEC tournament a guy in Denzel Aberdeen who came off the bench and gave you 20 points. And it's like, well,
average, what, 2 minutes a game?
Yeah, everyone within the program, I read, knew he was super talented, but he hasn't been able to find, you know, enough time on the floor. And so, like I said, Golden and what he does with his team, now that it looks a little different than it has all season long, for the most part, Hanlogton was a little injured to start the season. So he's played around with different lineups early, but that seems like so long ago. That was November. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it'll be fun to watch. Friday, by the way, the Frangie Show will be at Strings, and that game tips off at 4:30, so that's going to be a whole lot of fun, assuming Florida actually wins. Yeah. By the way, I do think Colorado is better than Boise State.
For you on air.
Yeah, it's always stressful. You're right about that. And we've been to Strings while Florida played in the NCAA tournament before in men's basketball. Florida won that game against Virginia Tech and then turned around and lost to Oral Roberts after. But we weren't at Strings for
that. That's what I was about to say. Maybe Strings is good luck.
Strings is good luck. That's right. All right, FAU, Mia. Number 8 FAU takes on number 9 Northwestern. I heard y'all have Mark Wise on yesterday on primetime, and he said he expects Northwestern to win. That has to break Owls fans' hearts.
Well, there's also a lot of people nationally who don't think FAU should even be on the 8 line, let alone in the tournament,
really?
If you've seen how they've played the last few weeks. They have 2 quad 3 losses. One is to Temple, which was in the American Athletic Conference last week. Of course, most notably, the loss to Florida Gulf Coast, which was a quad 4 loss. They also lost to Bryant, another quad 4 loss. So when you look at their resume, you look at the resume of some of these teams that got left out of the field, i.e. the Pitts, the St. John's, Rick Pitino forever, Seton Hall's of the world. They don't have those blemishes per se on their schedule. And people believe, again, this is just listening to CBS Sports, listening to The Ringer and some of the other podcasts that I listen to as an AP voter, they believe that the committee, which is made up of league commissioners and athletic directors, basically said, well, it's Dusty May and Florida Atlantic, and they have the same roster as the team that went to the Final Four last year. And they beat Arizona earlier this year when they were number one in the country. So we have to root for them, right? Right?
So is that, do you think that's the main reasoning? Do they have wins that have convinced people enough that they could be that team in the tournament this year that they were last year?
They have two quad one wins. Neither has come since December.
Wow.
And the one was, of course, over number one Arizona. We've seen them struggle at times during conference play. That's not to say they couldn't beat Northwestern.
Yeah.
You know, Northwestern isn't exactly, you know, a top 5 top 10 team either. It's not like there's some insurmountable power. Boo Booey is one of the better offensive threats, I should say, in the Big Ten. You know, he'll get a lot of All-American votes, but, you know, not to throw, you know, I think I can say this, but, you know, I believe that, whatchamacallit, I just was about to say his name for FAU. FAU guard, it's, whatchamacallit, John A. Davis. He's on my All-American list. Mm-hmm. I gave him a vote in the AP for the All-American list. He has carried that FAU team, and again, they brought back all five starters. Look, again, this is the risk you run when you say we're going to run it back. We saw it in the NFL with the Jaguars this year. You also have seen the Florida Gators, the last team to go back-to-back. They ran it back. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes UConn's run to the number one overall seed this year so fascinating, because they lost their top three scorers from the team that won the national title ago, national title a year ago. It's a completely new team, mm-hmm. and Dan Hurley was able to coach them to the number one overall seed. And so that's where I think with FAU, it's a lot of recency bias. Not that I don't believe they could beat Northwestern, because I do, but they obviously are very reliant on their three-point shooting. The interior play sometimes isn't there for them. And so I think that's probably going to be the biggest question mark. And if they do survive Northwestern, oh, congrats. Now you got to go play the Huskies.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so who's your final four if you've filled out your bracket?
Oh, I filled out several brackets.
What's your favorite bracket?
My favorite. Well, we're going to go to the home team bracket. How about one? So this is my Kevin and my – the first bracket that I did. So this is the one that, you know, my most educated guess. So this is just the two of us just in our house bracket. My final four, drum roll please – well, obviously UConn is in it. I know you're shocked. UConn currently -120, according to my bookie, to make the Final Four, which is absurd. Yeah. I don't think we've ever seen a number like that, at least in recent memory. I do have North Carolina also making it out of the West region, which I believe Iowa State should have had the best two seed if they were not that one seed, which North Carolina received. Mm-hmm. Instead, they're the eighth overall seed, and they end up in the same region as UConn, which is very unfortunate because I think they would have been a very trendy pick. I do think people might pick Arizona out of the West as well in the Caleb Love revenge game. I have Kentucky.
Wow.
I don't love it.
That's interesting.
I do believe, though, if Rob Dillingham does Rob Dillingham things, if Reed Shepard proves why so many mock draft experts in the NBA believe he is the best college player with an NBA future, if he plays to his ceiling, you could see something similar to the 2011 Kentucky team that also had a very young roster that had a lot of learning bumps and ups and downs, and they made their way to the Final Four, excuse me. So, yes. And then I do have Purdue. I don't have Purdue in the national title game. I have UConn and Kentucky in a repeat of that 2011 two of the teams that made the Final Four that year. I just want Matt Painter to make a Final Four so we can leave him alone. The fact that they retired Zach Edey's number before his final NCAA tournament, before he graduated, like, can you imagine if they get upset again by a double digit seed?
No.
Like, at this point, it would be laughable. So for Matt Painter, I want them to make the – I don't have them in the national title game. I still think they're going to come up just short, mm-hmm. Especially with the potential injury to Braden Smith. I know he came back into that loss at Wisconsin or the loss – the win over – who'd they play? Forget who, he came back into their first round game in the Big Ten tournament. But if he's banged up, I know they added some other pieces. They've added some more wing shooters since the debacle last year, losing to a 16 seed. But, yeah, I just
– So three number ones.
Yeah, I have three ones, and then I have Kentucky. That's in my one bracket. I do have UConn winning in four of my five brackets.
Like, let me pull out all my
I would like to give – before I post this video that I'm about to share on the 1010XL channels, would you like
give
some help
– first look.
Some helpful hints for your bracket, Lauren.
Yes, of course.
Let's run through. So for those of you who've been waiting until the 11th hour, here are some helpful tips. Number one, an 11 seed has made the Sweet 16 in 14 straight tournaments. So our 11 seeds this year are New Mexico, Duquesne, NC State, and Oregon. So
a lot of people like Oregon over South Carolina.
And a lot of people like New Mexico, who won the Mountain West, mm-hmm. and the committee said they only would have made the tournament if they won the Mountain West tournament. They did, so a lot of people are very high on the younger Patino and the Lobos. Another one for you. 11 of 12 years that there has been a first four, a.k.a. a field of 68 with the play-in in Dayton, at least one of those teams, all the high majors, none mm-hmm. of the 16 seeds, has made it to the round of 32. So Virginia, mm-hmm. Colorado State, Boise State. One of the
it's
four.
It's not going to be Boise State. I'm just kidding.
Right, or Colorado.
Virginia, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Or Colorado State, who many people picked to win the Mountain West. This is a fun one. three straight seasons. I blame Kentucky and Purdue for this, but three straight seasons that a 15 seed has won a first round mm-hmm. game. Of course, St. Peter's most notably. You know, the Peacocks run to the Elite Eight 2 years ago.
St. Peter's takes on Tennessee this year.
So could we see the Peacock fly?
And it is, of course, Lent.
South Dakota
St. Peter's.
That's true. South Dakota State, Western Kentucky, and Long Beach State, who fired their coach on Monday, last Monday, and then he coached them to the West Coast Conference title, or not West Coast, the West Conference, whatever it's called, one of the smaller ones out there on the West Coast. He was told he's going to be let go after 17 years, but then they made it to the tournament.
I saw that story, and it is wild. What they didn't touch on is he still going to be the coach after the tournament run?
They haven't decided.
Like, that's insane to me.
They're like,
he's told he's out. And also, the irony, Dan Monson, who is the coach of Long Beach State we're talking about, his mentee, Tommy Lloyd, is the head coach of Arizona, who they are playing in the first round, who has not made it to the second weekend in three seasons under Tommy Lloyd.
Yeah, I'm a big LB State fan in this tournament.
You like Long Beach State?
I just think the story.
I like that.
I don't like the story of firing a guy before the season's officially over. Just like I didn't love, and I don't remember the school now, but the woman who was let go right before her press conference.
Utah State, I think.
Maybe she had to be like, I won't be around for the rebuild because I just let go.
She's like, that's the end of that. Bye.
Yeah, how do you not wait for the press conference and then fire the person? Like, come on, man. All right, continue.
Okay, some other fun ones. Every champion since 2002 was top 57 in offensive efficiency on KenPom, top 37 in defensive efficiency. Go ahead, look that one up.
Yeah, KenPom's, you can easily Google KenPom offense and defensive efficiency, so you can take a look at those.
This is another fun one. No team has ever won the NCAA tournament after losing in the first round of their conference tournament. So that immediately...
So Tennessee is not winning.
Tennessee is eliminated by that notion. Kentucky, Creighton, Alabama, Duke, and Kansas. Now, that's to win the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. That's not to make the Final Four.
Right. Yeah, technically, Alabama got the... Didn't they have a double bye in the SEC tournament?
Yes.
So, like, their first round was a little different than, like, I would assume Kentucky and Tennessee both did, too. But either way. All right, that's good stuff.
Yeah, and there'll be more on 1010XL's YouTube channel here momentarily.
Beautiful.
Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all the good stuff.
All the social channels. We've got our highlights when we return. You are listening to 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Everybody get up.
A Tuesday night tradition in Duval.
Helmets and heels.
Switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
On 1010XL.
Mia O'Brien, Taylor Dahl, RJ Saunders, I'm Lauren Brooks with you on this Tuesday evening. By the way, in the NIT that nobody wants to play in, Georgia is a 4 seed taking on Xavier up 19-17. The only reason I mention that, Mia, isn't Xavier's coach one of the Miller brothers?
Yes, Sean Miller.
Sean Miller. How did Sean Miller get to a point where
he's
coaching Xavier in the NIT?
Well, Lauren, I hate to tell you this. Will Wade is coaching in the NCAA tournament and could beat Mark Few later this weekend.
He certainly could. And, of course, Mike White, the former Florida coach, of Georgia. Look, I never had an issue with him. The only problem with the basketball team mm-hmm. was they would go through these super long scoring droughts.
Yeah.
And guys that would come to Gainesville as pretty good shooters would leave as worse shooters. And it was like, okay, I don't know what you're spending your time in practice doing.
Some sort of developmental issues.
But it's obviously far more focused on defense, mm-hmm. not enough offense. And then Todd Golden gets to town. Mm-hmm. And a year ago, Florida's team had issues once Colin Castleton went down and he didn't have enough big help after that. But once he got this group of guys in, Florida's averaging, the last I looked, averaging around 85 points per game. Mm-hmm. That is night and day from the basketball that Florida knew. And of course, if you relate it to football, all the Spurrier fans, fun and gun offense in the 90s, Florida fans like offense. Yeah. And so they want to see that also in men's basketball. All right, RJ, time now for our highlights. Take it away.
Yale wins Ivy League on a buzzer beater over Brown 62-60.
Going in your head here if you're a player. Oh, kind of unguarded at the top of the key. He'll take it. Looking for help. Drops it to Embiid. 3-2. Drop off to Nolan. And they win it at the buzzer. The Bulldogs win it at the buzzer. They will review.
Denzel Aberdeen's three to put Florida up 68-63 on Texas A&M in the semifinals of the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament.
Zion Poland, hard to the hoop and a finger roll. Yeah, Todd told his team this morning, if we get that defensive rebound, I want to run and make A&M pay for their transition defense.
Aberdeen open. He has been magical.
Kalevon Chaisson gets a deal worth $5 million with the Panthers.
I think with Kalevon, you know, coming off of last season, you know, the growth and the potential that he had from last season going into this offseason, and you see a guy that understands the defense. He's a great, you know, in setting an edge in the run game. He gives you some really good pass rush, and a veteran player.
All right, who had the, I already kind of know, I'm going to guess Taylor, Kalevon Chaisson was your highlight.
That's fantastic. I was wondering which of you did that.
It would have been, most people probably would have thought that Mia would have chosen that as one of our Jags beat reporters, but as soon as you heard Yale men's basketball, you knew that was not me. Mia. Yeah, then you heard Florida men's basketball, you knew that was me, but let's start with Kalevon Chaisson and his one-year deal.
Yeah, I was kind of joking with John O'Leary earlier about it because he was like, man, he has like $5 million contract, like good for Kalevon. But then when the trade happened, it's always interesting to see when a fan base, let me say it that way, doesn't like a certain player, when that player goes somewhere else, the tweets are always fantastic because it just like my whole Twitter of people just posting things about Kalevon, like poor guy, bless his heart. But I was just laughing so hard. And then you go to the team that's getting them. So Panthers fans are like, oh yeah, like this is awesome. And the first video that popped up, someone quote tweeted this video and was like, this is like fun addition for the Panthers. This guy used to eat, like that term eat. The video was from like him at LSU, not even in the NFL. So I was already laughing, and then you just go through like this is they give him a C. This is one of the like Cat Crave. It's one of their fan sided pages for the Panthers. They give him a C, but this is the little paragraph they have on it. Expecting Chaisson to replicate the production of Brian Burns might be a stretch. I was like, might
be a stretch. What would give you any indication that might be a stretch? I don't know, the history. And look, like, I'm never somebody that likes to bash players unless I think they are not working hard or they have a bad attitude or things like that. But
5 sacks in 4 years.
But Kalevon Chaisson was obviously overdrafted when he was drafted 20th overall. And he's a hybrid type of player or position because he doesn't really fit anything that the Jaguars have ever done. And so I'm sure Luke Combs, when he was already upset with the Panthers previously, is probably following this going, wait a minute. You've got the Panthers ended up with C.J. Henderson, Laviska Shenault, and now Kalevon Chaisson. Yeah. If they're not good enough for the Jacksonville Jaguars, they're not good enough for the Panthers is what I would be thinking if I'm Luke Combs.
Who in Carolina has been watching the Jags this closely and been like,
yes, we'll
we need
them.
Those guys. Yeah. Dave's not there, by
or
the way.
Or maybe not close enough they haven't been watching.
Yeah, that certainly surprised me. All right, that was a great highlight. And then Yale hoops, they went on a buzzer beater.
Yeah, so this was right before Florida took the floor on Sunday in the SEC championship game. The Ivy League tournament final was the final game, or the first game, I should say, of the day on Sunday.
Okay. And I was not watching that.
Yale, the 2 seed, Brown, the 4 seed. Brown just had 12 wins like 2 weeks ago, and all of a sudden they have this magical run as the 4 seed to the final, upsetting Princeton, the number 1 seed, who, of course, went to the Sweet 16 in last year's NCAA tournament. They upset Princeton. Goodbye to Princeton's hopes of a repeat trip to the tournament. And Yale, it looked like all hope was lost. They were down 13 with, I think it was like a minute left or something like that. Or it was some inordinate number, and they were able to chip it away. They were literally down, I think that was with 14 seconds left. They were down 1, found a way. And I think what was most impressive was the player that scored the game-winning bucket. Like, there's like 4 seconds on the clock, and I'm screaming, shoot it, like, get it up. Managed the clock perfectly. Mm-hmm. 0.2 seconds is like when he lets the ball out of his hand and falls right through the cylinder, and the rest is history. And, you know, I enjoy Bruce Pearl for content. I'm a little worried he may be riding a little high after that SEC tournament victory. they draw the Bulldogs and their tough defense in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Could that be our 13-4 upset this year?
No. It could, but after watching Jani Broome closely, I'm going to say that he's not scared of Yale, despite the fact that
I didn't realize he's from Tampa.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea.
We thought, we being Florida fans, thought he was going to go to Florida for a brief period of time.
Right.
And then, yeah, picked Auburn. I went with the
Dang it, Bruce.
Yeah. Denzel Aberdeen and the Florida's comeback win over Texas A&M. Again, this was all beforehand. Logton was hurt. But what Florida was able to do in the men's basketball tournament, I mean, coming close to 4 wins in 4 days. And again, had he not gotten hurt, we'll see what that game looked like, because Florida routed Auburn in Gainesville not that long ago. So, of course, it was a little bit of a revenge game for Bruce Pearl and for those Auburn Tigers. But the fact that Denzel Aberdeen was just lights out from three was super fun to see. And it just makes you wonder, what else can Todd Golden get from his bench? And I think the most important thing is just how far this program's come this year with him at the helm. Because, of course, people are so angry about the football side of things that now at least they can relax a little bit, and they know they have the right men's basketball coach who's gotten the extension, and we'll see what they do in the tournament. Yes. And like I said, they play on Friday.
I want to real quick, because speaking of the tournament, it was something Mia was talking about earlier, and it interested me, so I wanted to look it up when she was you were saying the BPI and the altitude. So I really wanted to see what this was about. So obviously the BPI, the College Basketball Power Index, the altitude is included in this. So it's obviously it's a way to calculate the opponent strength. Opponent strength, pace of play, sight, travel distance, days of rest, and altitude are all categories that are put into this to find BPI. So they're pretty much saying that the teams, it's harder to play at these high altitude places, so the visiting team may struggle to adjust to that environment.
It's called home court advantage.
Yeah, they said in comparison to a team that plays their home games there all the time, but the problem is, I guess people aren't very happy about it, because they said the punishment for these high altitude teams is too harsh, pretty much. Like 40% to 70% it is negative on them if they play in high, like against certain teams that it's knocking them. So they go through, and obviously Mountain West, Pac-12, Big 12, Big Sky, all those teams, and they go through this list and how much it's certain effect. There's some games that, like Colorado, 100%. Is like it negatively affects them in certain games when it comes to BPI.
That's wild.
I had no idea until this morning when I was listening to Matt Norlander. I had no idea that this was a thing. Like,
it was just, it's 148% for Colorado State. And then Colorado is 100%. But even teams like Idaho State is still 6% affected, Nevada 14%, Southern Utah 17%, Montana State 13%. But it has all this category. And so people are like, should it, like you just said, that's your home court advantage.
Right.
But it's not just like a little change. It's affecting people to like 40% difference when it comes to being, if you play in one of those places.
My thing is, guess what, folks? Guess who's one of the host sites for the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament? Salt Lake City, Utah. I think that's pretty high above water, is it not? Pretty high above sea level.
Yeah, those are all in like 20s, 30s, so that automatically. So who counts on that? Because it's two teams playing each other that aren't used to. So do you still calculate that altitude in there?
And by the way,
I would think not.
Speaking of the Salt Lake City pod, some breaking news, ladies, from the University of Kansas. Coach Campo, if you're listening, you're going to want to cover your ears, although you may have seen it already. Kevin McCullough, the second leading scorer for the Kansas Jayhawks, who missed all of last week's Big 12 tournament, in which Bill Self basically said, Kevin McCullough and Hunter Dickinson, my two best scorers, are both hurt. So we're just not going to play them, rest them for the tournament. All is well. They will be back, even though Hunter Dickinson has a separated shoulder. And Dr. George Barry said, you don't just come back from a separated shoulder a week later. Kevin McCullough is officially out. The NCAA tournament. Fifth-year senior, was averaging 18.3 points per game, six That's rebounds per game. They're facing a Samford team. They call it Buckyball because of Bucky is the name of their head coach. They pick you up 90 feet out. I mean, and they have as deep a bench. They have, I believe it's like an 8 or a 9 or even 10-person rotation. They get fresh legs in there. They play press. They press the whole time. They play an up-tempo style of offense. Mm-hmm. They shoot the three when it's on. Good luck. So that will be a very trendy 13-4 pick as you guys continue to fill out your brackets.
Interesting. A couple local baseball games. UNF is tied 1-1 with Bethune-Cookman, and that game is at Bethune-Cookman. And then Florida just had some really good offense. And while they were down 3-0, they are now up 4-3. I know Caglione hit a home run. I think a couple other guys did as well.
Of course
so
he did.
Because that's what he does exactly. Yeah, that game in Gainesville. All right, we've got 1 second to go here on Helmets and Heels. And Taylor has that top 10 of the offseason moves for us when we return on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Sports with a glass of Chardonnay. Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
On 1010 XL.
1 segment to go here on Helmets and Heels. Taylor Dahl, Mia O'Brien, RJ Saunders, I am Lauren Brooks. All right, the top 10 moves of the offseason thus far. Of course, that includes both trades and free agency signings. Taylor, you read the list to us earlier. I'm going to have you go through it again. Mm-hmm. This is from Cody Benjamin of CBS Sports. But I can tell people the Jaguars are not in it, according, again, to Cody Benjamin, which I disagree with, but go ahead and take us through.
Yeah, and I disagree with that. Also, I did see a graphic floating around this weekend, too, and it was like top 10 worst signings, and the Jags were on that list, and I also disagreed with that one. The Bears were also on that one, and I disagreed with that also, but maybe we'll find that list. But this one is the top. Obviously, we had a long conversation about this. He has number one, Steelers getting Justin Fields. I get that. They only had to give up a next year sixth round for Justin Fields. You've seen a lot of glimpses of Justin Fields. I think that when you're talking about putting him behind Russell Wilson and some of the weapons and just the Steelers organization and Mike Tomlin, all of those things kind of factor into it. It's just a low-risk, high-reward possibility for them. So I get the number one.
Yeah, I get that number one as well. But I'm going to say number two, Falcons signing quarterback Kirk Cousins changes their team more because he's actually going to be starting. Yeah, as of now, Justin Fields is backing up. So I would argue about that. But I do think the Falcons did a good job getting
Maybe it was
Cousins.
More of the contract for that one just because everyone just keeps giving Kirk Cousins so much money.
Good grief. And I know we all loved Quarterback, the series on Netflix a year ago. Do you think Receiver, the new Netflix series, will be as beloved as Quarterback was?
I think it'll be even more dramatic.
The Receiver one?
Because they're divas.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. They're more chirpy.
Well, and it features George Kittle.
Yes. He's not a receiver.
He's not a receiver. He's a pass catcher.
He
so maybe
the
we
ball.
Should have called. Yeah, we should have
It is interesting,
that,
though, that like Debo is in it, but so is George Kittle. I was like, I didn't expect that to be the case.
But that's Devontae, Justin Jefferson, George Kittle, Debo Samuel, and Amon-Ra. Like, that's going to be fun. And all of them have personalities, a little bit different, each of them. I know Amon-Ra, we've seen clips and listened to clips on here of him and his brother's podcast. He is very chirpy and likes to run his mouth a whole lot.
So does their dad.
Yeah, so does dad.
That will be a fun
And George
series.
Kittle's like goofy and kind of funny, quirky. I feel like I don't know Devontae Adams' personality that much, honestly.
Because he used to play for the Packers.
But I feel like I should know that then. But I don't ever remember him being like, he was really good, but I never disliked him. Like, I feel like he never had that personality where I was like, that's too much, you know, which sometimes you get that from, especially your rivals.
Yes, certainly
your rivals
you do.
Teams.
They have Chiefs tagging L'Jarius Sneed, the corner at 3, Chiefs signing Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown, the wide receiver at 4. I feel like whatever the Chiefs do, everybody's going to sign off on because, yeah, they have Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes.
I do like the Hollywood move, though.
I think they needed a receiver. Mm-hmm. They were not going to be dumb like the Titans and pay Calvin Ridley 4 years, $92 million and $50 million guaranteed. They knew better than to do that.
Some of these receivers, Jerry Jeudy just got his a big contract, too. They're definitely paying these guys nowadays.
They certainly are. Ravens signed running back Derrick Henry. Look, mm-hmm. I hate it for the Jaguars because I wanted Derrick Henry to come here. Mm-hmm. I didn't care what it cost. And I would have loved it so much. But if you're a Ravens fan, how do you not love the Derrick Henry move and add him to Lamar Jackson and Mark Andrews and Zay Flowers? I always want to say Zay Jones.
Yeah. And at least he's out of the AFC South.
Right.
Exactly.
The stats been thrown around out there that, like, since 2018, the running back who has the most rushing yards is obviously Derrick Henry. Mm-hmm. And then the player who has the most yards before contact, after, like basically – the two rushing leaders since 2018 have been Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
Like, I understand one's a quarterback and one is a running back, but like when you talk about thunder and lightning, like this is the ultimate pairing.
Well, in addition, they've started building the receivers there also. So that was kind of the knock for a while. Like, great, they could run the ball, but you know, you gotta have guys that can stay healthy and catch the ball, and you've they've been able to find that now. So being able to have to stop Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, Zay Flowers, all of these weapons. Oh, and what's the young tight end that that went off last year?
Isaiah Likely.
Isaiah Likely. All of these weapons now, that's going to be a tough team to stop offensively.
Yes, certainly. Sure. We were on air last week when we found out the Texans were signing Danielle Hunter, the defensive end from the Vikings. We obviously don't love that. I, by the way, around now would put in the Jaguars getting Arik Armstead. The defensive linemen, they do not. They do have the Bears. Number 7, Cody Benjamin, has the Bears acquiring wide receiver Keenan Allen. I think that's a great move and certainly is going to help, like you said earlier in the program, Caleb Williams, who will be the quarterback for the Bears. The 49ers signing defensive end Leonard Floyd at 8. That one doesn't affect, I feel like, them that much because they already have so much talent on that defensive front. The Rams signing Jonah Jackson. What'd you say?
I said they did lose one of their pass rushers to here, but he's an end, so it's a little different.
Yeah, I do think it's a little different. But again, I still think they've already got so much talent there with, obviously, Bosa and Hargrave. And then Rams signing a guard, Jonah Jackson. I wouldn't have that on the list. And finally, Frankie Louvu, the linebacker, going to the Commanders. I mean,
Jimmy G just went to the Rams today. Did you guys see that,
by
the way?
Yeah, I did see that.
So I'm like, maybe they're just like, we really need some help up there because it's, you know, you want to keep Stafford healthy because if not, we have to go to Jimmy G that's been super banged up.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting move. But I also wonder, at what point do we see these quarterbacks, some of them get phased out of the league? But
yeah,
Joe Flacco's like, I've still got it. And
because Joe Flacco's still got it, they're going to keep throwing darts against the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're going to be like, okay, well, everyone kind of was way down and out on Flacco last year, and then he had the end of the season he did, played better than Deshaun Watson did when he was playing. So now people will be like, well, maybe we'll pay some of these guys. You can get them for cheap. They can come in. If they have to come in and play, you can at least get some experience and a veteran guy who can manage it for at least a little bit of time.
Yes, exactly. By the way, JU just retook the lead against Florida in baseball. They scored with a slow roller to first with the bases loaded, according to Jacob Runner. So JU now leading Florida 5-4 that game in Gainesville. It's always fun when the local teams play against each other. All right, Mia, you'll be off next week, right?
Yes, I will be out of the country. I've confirmed I will have an international plan, but it's not that good. So don't be trying to call me, folks. And I promise I will try not to rile the masses in San Francisco with any reports of a Brandon Ayuk trade while I'm across the pond.
Yes, don't agitate people when you're gone because that will only lead to a lot of bad social media.
Would you guys have been okay with giving up 17 for Ayuk? Because that was the thing that was floating.
Yeah, the tricky part.
And it was very torn from what I saw.
Yeah, the tricky part with that is then you also have to pay him.
Yeah.
And if it was a little different of a scenario, then I would have been okay with it, although, you know, you still really do need a good corner. But I think I would have been much happier with 48 and then having to pay him.
Yeah, it's not a pick swap. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You still need that first round pick. Mm-hmm. There's still too many other holes you need to address, despite the depth of the cornerback group this year, because of the lack of depth along the defensive front, along the edge and the interior. You'd be gambling.
Yeah.
You'd be saying, all right, we're going to guarantee one of our guys is there at 48 or we'll have the ability to trade back into the first round. And you just can't guarantee that. Yeah. And so
now what if they ended up going wide receiver there?
Right.
Well,
that'll
people would look back and be like, we could have had Ayuk. And
right. And I think that's what they'll do. There's the argument to be made that you will have more cap space because that 17th overall pick will be on a much cheaper rookie contract, comparatively speaking, compared to what Brandon Ayuk would be commanding. But
you're just hoping it hits also.
You also, exactly. You also can't guarantee that 17th overall pick is a day one starter like Ayuk would be for you.
Yeah,
exactly. All right, let's say hello to Rick Ballew. Ricky B is in the house.
Hello!
Rick, I always say this. It must be cold outside if you're wearing pants.
It's cold golfing.
Where
still got out
play?
There?
It was cold golfing. It was cold. It was cold. It was cold. It was. But it was still, when the sun was shining, it was awesome.
Yeah. Where'd you play?
I can't tell you because they don't sponsor.
Oh, okay. Okay. Station.
I give no free plugs. I mean,
I can understand that.
You know, I mean, it's just, if you're not advertising on this radio station, you're an imbecile. No free plugs.
All right, I get
but
it.
But I had a great day.
Well, good. I'm glad.
I went low, 39-43.
All right.
Feeling good. Back's feeling good. Probably lie about it coming up tonight, late night. But, I mean, it's so great to go out there and not sweat at all.
Yeah. That part is nice.
Yeah.
And the wind wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. That was
Who do you like in the field of 68? Obviously, no Knowles, but do you
Knowles aren't in. That Knowles are, I didn't think the Knowles even got an NIT bid.
I don't think they did.
Yeah.
And that was despite half of the NIT invitees saying no to the NIT.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that Connecticut's getting like 22-24% of the gate at the window. That people
minus 120 to make the Final Four.
Right, that people are betting on right now. I mean, I've always said that it's tough to repeat. We just saw Scottie Scheffler repeat. We just saw the Kansas City Chiefs repeat. But before that, what? You go back to New England in the early 2000s. It never happened here at the Players' Championship. I just think it's so hard to win one of these. Let's face it. You need to be a really good team. But you also need some breaks along the way. All championship teams get a break, whether it's a call or a missed tackle or no matter what it is. I think you need some dumb luck in order to win a championship. I just don't believe Connecticut can do it for a second consecutive year. So I'm still kind of running it through the lab. JJ and I are going to tomorrow night on our show, you know, officially pick everything through our Final Four and the national title. The answer to your question right now is I don't know. I need one more night on it. I need to sleep one more night.
What's coming up tonight?
Oh, we got a lot of good stuff planned tonight. Really, the latest on the ACC. That thing's crumbling right in front of our face. At this point, I wonder will we still have the meetings coming up in mid-July? You know, they spread it out to 4 days this year because they added, you know, those
SMU,
schools.
Stanford. Yeah. It's going to take them 3 days to get out there, Lauren.
I mean, it's going to be a 4-day event, which used to be only the SEC. So that's going to be in the ACC. This year. So, you know, we'll talk about the very latest there. And then I got a couple of things on the Jags that I went back and did a little bit of homework on. So I'm going to throw that out to our listeners, and I think they'll like what they hear.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks,
Thank
Rick.
You.
All right. There he goes. Stay tuned for Into the Night with Rick Ballew. And again, college basketball on already, college baseball on. Lots of good sports to pay attention to this evening. For Taylor Dahl, for Mia O'Brien, for RJ Saunders, I'm Lauren Rooks. Keep it right here on Tonight's Sun on 92.5 FM.